Jumping in on Manx Radio
with Howard and Chris Kane.
Hello,
good evening,
and welcome. And here we are once again on a Saturday night on Manx Radio. 9 o'clock, the time for the best in modern and contemporary jazz in Jumpin' In. A bit of a special, because it is a big happy birthday.
Indeed it is. Welcome along to this week's show, and what a treat. We thought we'd celebrate the great pianist, composer, synthesist Herbie Hancock's 84th birthday, which, for those of you taking notes, was yesterday. And if you're listening on the podcast, look it up. And
yes,
the great man is still out on the road playing. So we put together a collection of tracks from him and tributes recorded by many other musicians. So, H, when you were digging through your herbiferous border, which tracks grabbed you and which sweet watermelons had already been headhunted?
There are so many, despite all the puns, that I didn't know where to start, so it was almost a dip, dip, dip. I thought I'd better take off. That's at the beginning, after all. Brecker and Hancock, Directions and Music. I've forgotten all about that. And a great favourite. All that time he spent with Miles, Dip, 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 went for Water Babies.
And for me, well, we depart on our first trip. We get fruity, we change colour, and to start off, we flutter with Martin Schoenstatt and the Stockholm Jazz Orchestra, and of course, Butterfly.
Thank you.
butterfly, of course, and not Herbie in this instance, but a fantastic kicking big band arrangement there, I think. Started back in 2011, the Stockholm Jazz Orchestra is in fact a collective, really, made up of many musicians who have accomplished careers as soloists and individual composers, and for many of their albums, their previous three or four have all focused on all original compositions. On this new album, Horizon, it has nine, four of which are composed by Martin Schjødsted, the leader, and the others are all arrangements of various different people and tributes to that, of course, being Herbie Hancock's Butterfly. And lovely timing, great horn writing, I think, and Frederick Kornquist, who we have featured on the programme before, with a fabulous alto solo in the middle there.
Terrific stuff, lovely way to get going. We are celebrating the birthday of the great Herbie Hancock. Still going strong, I'm happy to say. We've seen him several times over the years. Not recently, I wouldn't mind seeing him again at some stage in one form or another. And he's particularly good, I think, in small group settings, although he tends to favour, obviously, strutting the stage with some electronica these days. Who can blame him? But I thought we may as well go back to the beginning, taking off as he did in 1962 in an album recorded at Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey on May the 28th of 1962, not that long before I was born, just a few months. He went into Rudy Van Gelder's studios and recorded Taking Off in fairly exalted company. Freddie Hubbard, trumpet, Dexter Gordon, tenor, Herbie on piano, of course, Butch Warren bass, the great Billy Higgins at the drums. And from that album, this is Three Bags Full. We'll be right back. Still sounds fresh as a daisy, I must admit, after all these years. 1962, that was recorded, the first solo album by Herbie Hancock on the Blue Note label, taken off with a picture of a very young-looking Herbie, taken from above at the keyboard. And then the liner notes, it says, running down his biographical background, Herbie opened with the statement, "I was born in Chicago in April the 12th, 1940, reminding me with a start that at the time Teddy Wilson had his big band, Jess Stacy was winning all the polls, and Blue Note was a year old. My parents are not professional musicians. My dad was a bathtub singer. My mother tinkles around on the piano. I was always interested in music as a very young child. I began taking music lessons at 7. 4 years later, I was performing with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra." Which gives you an impression that, yes, he was pretty talented from an early age. I think he did Mozart or something like Carnegie Hall at a very, very early age. And then went on there to, well, you name it, what hasn't he done? He's played with pretty much every musician you can think of over the years. Lots of classic albums. We'll be hearing more from him, some of his classic albums, later on in the programme. Wonderful straight jazz in that straight-ahead format with horns and playing just straight piano. Then, of course, got very interested in the electronica, which we'll be hearing more of, and even pop later on, and a bit of third stream and mixing in with other different cultural... Fode Musa Suzo, I think he was, the kora player. I'll get there yet. And mixing different cultures, and he is still going, which is the wonderful thing. So we're just trying to give you a little taste, a little sort of reprise of some of his work over all those years.
And that 11-year-old concert was, in fact, Mozart's Piano Concerto number 26 in D major with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Not something that everyone can achieve. And he said at that age he also started listening to jazz himself. George Shearing, Errol Garner, Bill Evans and Oscar Peterson. Really not a bad place to start. And he also started listening to vocal groups. He said the High Lows influenced him in a lot of his voicings early on. That was a vocal group. And recently he's done an album, Imagine, we're not playing it today, but with a lot of contemporary pop artists on it, doing arrangements showing world music influence of different pop songs. And that's a fascinating album as well. Well, next for me, his fifth album as a leader. And already by this time, he'd established himself as being one to watch. And a concept album, no less, back in 1965. These were few and far between at the time. But Maiden Voyage, for that is the album, was conceived as a concept album about the sea, basically. And about marine biology. All the titles refer to various different things of the sea. Still a cracking band. George Coleman on sax, Freddie Hubbard again on trumpet, bassist Ron Carter, and this time the great late Tony Williams at the drums. Let's hear that first track, Maiden Voyage. Thank you. another pretty much flawless recording. I think there was a lot of complaints at the time when it came out in 1965 about recording quality. Unusual for Rudy van der Gelder to have complaints, but they cited an issue with the actual pressing, and the master tapes were subsequently lost. However, the CD release, I'm glad to say, was remastered, obviously at a time when they still had access, as indeed the re-released album is, and it still sounds pretty good to me. Now, of course, looking at that band, Coleman, Carter, Williams and Hancock himself had all been part of a recently earlier Miles Davis quintet, and Blue Note logs say in the studio that they'd actually made an attempt to record Maiden Voyage, Little One and Dolphin Dance 6 days earlier with Hubbard on the cornet and Stu Martin in place of Williams on the drums, but they were rejected at the time as having not been the quality they wanted, and the tapes have subsequently been lost over the years. Whether they'll pop up later, who knows? All kinds of things have been coming out of the woodwork, haven't they? A different version of Little One actually didn't end up on this album because it was subsequently recorded the same year by Miles Davis with his quintet, by then including Wayne Shorter rather than Coleman, for ESP in the same year, as I say. But a lovely, lovely album. Maiden Voyage, great track.
It is wonderful. Again, it just seems timeless. For me, it just sort of just hangs there limpid sort of in the air and just is beautiful sort of... Just sort of time seems to stand still for a while. Love it, and sounds as good now as the first time I heard it. It still sounds, again, really fresh and modern. And yeah, I could happily play that for the rest of my years. The whole album is very good if you've never checked it out. I'm sure a lot of you will have done, and along with its sister album, Empyrean Islands, which is also very good indeed. He did so much stuff, of course. Again, where do you start with his work with the second great Miles Davis quintet with Tony Williams on the drums, the wonderful Wayne Shorter on the tenor sax, of course, and Ron Carter on the bass. Dozens and dozens of albums there, an awful lot of very long tracks. Live at the Plugged Nickel, some tracks running to 18, 20 minutes and such like, but wow, there's so much energy, there's so much pent-up sort of angst, there's so much drive and right on the edge. Oh gosh, you could say that about so many of the albums. I almost had to stick a pin in, really, just to sort of get something from the Miles Davis days. And I've always really rather liked this one from one of the dozens of albums I must have done, including the live ones and stuff still coming out of live recordings. Water Babies, and this is Wayne Shorter's Capricorn. Thank you.
I don't know if you could catch that at the end. There's a wonderful little sliding bass note finishing up from Ron Carter. And then just at the very end in the distance, you hear Miles's rasp, "Play it, Dio."
wonderful stuff. Capricorn from the... It's regarded, I think, as a minor album in the canon of the Miles Davis, or the second great Miles Davis quintet, but none the worse for that in my book. Water Babies. And we're told in Roman mythology, Janus, the god of gates and doorways, and for whom the first month of the year is named, of course, January, is represented by two faces looking in opposite directions. Water Babies, whilst a fairly minor work, presents what amounts to be backwards and forward-looking snapshots in the ever-developing musical life of Miles Davis. Recorded in June of 1967 with Davis on trumpet, Ron Carter bass, the great Tony Williams again at the drums there. What a great cymbal touch he had, I must admit. We were just saying, love to have seen him live. Such an amazing player, brilliant cymbal touch and cymbal ride rhythm stuff going on, and some of those splits in between on the drums. Herbie Hancock, of course, that amazing, spiky, ever-forward-thinking piano. Brilliant stuff, and again, it sort of just doesn't date that sort of music, it has to be said. And, well, yeah, we had to have one from the Miles Davis years. For me, well, that's it. Dip, dip, dip. I know there's 1,000 others you could choose, but I still think that's a cracker.
A cracker indeed, and another cracker, which was quite a big hit as well, although not for Herbie, strange enough. Watermelon Man was written by Herbie for his first album, taking off back in 1962. Fairly straight-ahead, hard-grooving bop record, as we heard earlier, Freddie Hubbard, Dexter Gordon, etc. It did have a single release at that time, and it reached into the top 100 just about. Some many years later, Herbie was introduced by Donald Byrd to Mongo Santa Maria, and who had, with his group, Chick Corea had been the pianist, but had recently left, and Herbie was asked if he would sit in for a gig in New York at a club, and he'd been asked by Donald Byrd to play him this 16-bar blues he'd been working on, Watermelon Man, and they played it with the band. Mongo joined in on his congas throughout it, really enjoyed it, and he noticed that a lot of the crowd were getting up and dancing when this went on, heaven forfend, and he asked Herbie, would it be all right if he would record his own version and put his own lyrics onto it? That went ahead and became a top 10 hit, and they pretty much said that it fed Herbie Hancock for 5 or 6 years after that, with the money that came in from the royalties paid purely for that song. As for the inspiration, Herbie said, I remember the cry of the Watermelon Man making the rounds in the back streets and alleys of Chicago. The wheels of his wagons bit out the rhythms on the cobblestones. Well, this is not Herbie playing. This is a different version. This is David Helbock with his Random Control, which is a trio, and between them they play some 24 instruments. He has 18 albums in his name, David Helbock. The 34-year-old pianist is not afraid of putting his own stamp on things. And his recent release, Tour d'Horizon, is in fact looking at the great pianists and musicians that have influenced him. And this was what influenced him for Herbie Hancock. Thank you. Sounding much bigger than the trio they are. They're fantastic from David Hellbox Trio. Random Control and different instrumentation too. No drums, just beatboxing going on, plus a tuba for bass, as well as a tin whistle played there. On the later version, on Headhunters, more of which later on, the groundbreaking album for Herbie, really, in many, many ways, he had that track played with a used a beer bottle in imitation of the Mbuti Pygmy's Hindihu flute. Great name, the Hindihu flute. You got one of those? No, neither do I. And Bill Summers was playing into a beer bottle on the version and singing in between on the Headhunters, and that a tribute to that track.
It is our little celebration for the birthday of Herbie Hancock, still going strong in his 80s, and long may he continue. Directions in music. I said he played with pretty much anyone and everyone live at Massey Hall in 2002, celebrating Miles Davis music, of which he was associated so closely for so many years, and that of John Coltrane in the stellar lineup of Herbie piano, Mike Brecker on a tenor sax, John Patitucci bass, Brian Blade at the drums, and the late great Roy Hargrove on trumpet. Check out a bit of Sorcerer.
Thank you.
Just a little sampler of a duet album from 1997 between Herbie Hancock with his old running spa pal Wayne Shorter, of course. And a track which they called Hail Bop Hip Hop. And it's hopping, I must admit, on that CD for some reason, for no apparent reason, but there we go. Old technology, eh? And before that, of course, Herbie Hancock, Michael Brecker, the great late Roy Hargrove, along with John Patitucci and Brian Blade at Massey Hall with the Directions in Music, celebrating Miles and John Coltrane. Just a little sampler of the wide-ranging taste, and it is just a little sampler of the wonderful talents of the great Herbie Hancock, and a very happy birthday to him.
And let's not forget that he's still out on the road, so the chances are available to go and see him playing live. It wouldn't be right, perhaps, if we didn't leave him with what was a breakthrough album for him, both compositionally and, I think, financially. Commercially, certainly, it was a big success. Headhunters. Now, he'd experimented in crossover, bringing more rock and electronics in, and had a number of experimental albums, really. Wundishi, Crossings and Sextant, which were released between 1971 and 1973. In 1973, late October the 26th, he took the recording sessions for this album, which was, as you say, a breakover introducing funk and rock audiences. And if you're not moving by the end of this track, or indeed grooving, then there's something seriously wrong. Featuring woodwind player Bernie Maupin from his previous success and new collaborators Paul Jackson on bass, Bill Summers at the percussion, and drummer Harvey Mason, the group became known as Headhunters, and also they had a number of other releases they were involved in, and a version of Headhunters without Herbie is still going together. But this track particularly is one that only those people on the podcast will be able to hear all of. But let's leave you with at least a significant bit of Chameleon.
Yeah, classic, doesn't date.
See you next week. Bye for now.
We'll be right back. Bye.